Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the only podcast that has snow on its roof in springtime. Here it is, April 2nd, and I just finished shoveling my driveway, but one person who has no snow on his roof ever is the one, the only proprietor of the Saturday Morning Collectibles booth over at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 to 90 to be exact. It's a hopping place. You'll never know what you can find. He's always getting new merchandise. He knows everything. You can't get anything past this man. Yes, it's him, the one and only, our version of Rob Bruce, John Cimino.
So what, my eyes are yellow and I'm a mean, miserable grunt?
You don't have that thing growing on the back of your head.
What's that, a tumor?
No, I believe it was
and
some type
my,
of...
Wait, all my merchandise is stolen?
No, it was some type of dreadlock he had, but he had to chop it off because it was...
What, the dreadlock? I thought it was a fist.
It was causing him to have neck problems.
We love Robert. Don't worry about
it. I know.
We love Robert.
We say we love Robert because when you always talk about how I'm going to get killed in the woods, that's going to be the last face I see before I get killed.
Yeah, and you want to know something? He looks like an old colonial guy back in, like, you know,
he does.
He's like a farmer back in the colonial time.
Well,
because he's missing a few teeth, his eyes are yellow, and he's got welts on his.
Got wooden teeth, I heard.
Yes, like George Washington.
Well, according to myth, he is the great-grandson of, or great-grandnephew of, President Theodore Roosevelt.
What? Is it the family that Theodore didn't want to frigging acknowledge? Or
apparently. No. No, he's told me that. He's related to the president, believe it or not.
And related to Stan Lee, too. So we got something.
Everybody's related to somebody. Sure, why not? Take claim for something you didn't do.
Well, wait a second. Just so we're on that subject. There was a kid in my classroom when I was in fifth grade, and we did that thing, you find your family tree. His name was James Lynch, probably long dead now. And they traced his history back. He was actually related to William Penn, you know, the guy that discovered Pennsylvania?
Yeah. Yeah, William Penn, yeah.
Yeah, he got no residuals. He was poor.
We're all poor. Anyway, what?
Yeah, regular. You know. Sorry, go ahead.
You done with our history lesson here? The fans want to hear us talk about comic books and movies and toys and stuff. They don't want to hear about real world problems. They got enough of that stuff. We are the opiate for their needs. They turn this on, and for a half hour and 45 minutes, they just let the world just fade away, man. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're their addiction.
We're spreading like some type of prescription drug epidemic.
Yeah, we're their pain pills down in like that. That's why we're big in Florida.
We want people to overdose on the Power Cosmic, man. 91 episodes. Can you believe that?
Is this the 91st episode?
91st episode, yeah.
What did Matt Herring from the...
Matt Herring, he called it... Matt Herring of the former Secret Identity podcast, who now hosts some type of UFO or Stripe...
Striper member now, isn't he? Did he join the band Striper?
He's officially... He's the fifth Beatle. He's the fifth Striper.
Yeah. backpacking through Europe with them or something now? We never see them anymore.
That's Striper with a Y, not with an I. We're not talking about the fish. We're talking about
the 80s hair band.
Yeah, no, he's with that. But lo and behold, he predicted, like a Howard Cosell of podcasting, he gave us only 20 episodes.
Was it 20? I thought it was 12.
It might have been. It was a low number. He said, you guys won't go the distance because you're two egos. Not going to happen.
But, Mitch, what's funny is when we were talking about that, like, the goal was just to beat Matt Herring.
We only did this show not to entertain the masses, all three of you, Stuart, Chris, and Scott. It was just to defy Matt Herring, because we're from that old school belligerent idiots that if you tell us not to do something, we'll do it just to spite you.
Absolutely.
That's revenge, is its best thing. Why do you think I do CT GamerCon? Because I'm a big gamer? No, it was just to get, it was a preventive strike on a competitor. That people don't need to know the skeletons in my closet, but.
Take it easy.
Let's not lay all our differences right here. All right. You know why I'm in a good mood? And it's not because I'm still coming down off the Easter candy chocolate high of yesterday. I fell off the wagon, man. I love how you're starting to give me the support group calls. My wife couldn't stop laughing. You're like, call me. Do you need support? Because you knew. You knew I was just falling like a, you know.
Let me fill them in. All right. Mitchie went to his mom.
I went to my 80-year-old mother's house. Yes.
His 80-year-old mother. And first off, my support is very vicious. And the funny thing is, I can hear you laughing on the other side.
Oh, I was dying. Yeah.
But the thing is, it's like, I knew. See, it's funny, because when you go to your parents' house, sometimes those old feelings come up, because they cook the way you remember it.
And
it's just like, it's almost like an addiction. So when they put stuff on the table and stuff. Now, I'm lucky because I was with my daughter. I do my own stuff, you know. But when I knew Mitchie was going over there, I was just berating him. And he's like, I sent you like 20 texts of the most filthy, the most mean.
Oh, they were vicious. I was like, oh my.
So vicious. And then you try to turn it into, don't make fun of my mother. And I said, I could give a shit.
I know. I was like, hey, that's my mom. You back off, buddy.
So Mitch, always maintain my diet and my regularity.
Yeah.
First off, what did the Mitchie family have, and then what did the Mitchie?
Oh well, you know, it was a traditional Italian Easter, so there was lots of food, and I mean, you know, being Italian, any day of the week is a cause for lots of food. There was ham pie. Which, if you don't know what ham pie is, it's kind of like chopped up ham, eggs, and cheese or whatever, all cooked, baked into a pie. It's like a giant egg McMuffin. It's an egg McCake. And
yeah,
then,
isn't that like a truffle?
Ham pie. It's like a quiche, I guess, maybe, you know.
Yeah,
I guess.
Quiche.
And then there was, of course, there's always pies. They got the ragout pie, you got the rice pie, you got all these pies. I don't know what it is. There's pies everywhere. And then we did have vegetables. There were some vegetables there. There was some Brussels sprouts and some roasted vegetables. But then there was the ham. And then there's the stuff that goes with the ham and on. My sister Debbie was there. My sister Kim was there. My kids were there. Sharon was there. Then there's the babkas, which is like a Polish raisin bread that they bring out, you know, whatever. There's a lot of stuff, Johnny, but the Cadbury cream egg, that's my drug of choice.
You want to know something? I like those, too.
Oh, my God. You can't not like that shit. Yeah.
When I was a kid, no, but I did get fond of those within the last few years. Now,
it's something about it, though. It's like the rich chocolate, and then you get hit with that sugary inside. Oy, it's a quick fix, man. It's like crack.
Mitchie sits at the table.
And then hold on, we didn't finish the sweets. You got your Peeps. I'm a big Peep fan. A little marshmallow, yellow Peeps.
I can't do Peeps.
That's pure sugar,
I'm not
man.
A big marshmallow guy. I like cereal marshmallow and cereal, but yeah. I hate regular marshmallows.
Do you know marshmallow Lucky Charms? You know what those originally were? You know those circus peanuts? Those orange circus peanut candies?
Yeah, those things.
That woman that was, I don't know who was, Kellogg's or General Mills, she was married to the guy, and all she did was take alphabets, which had no marshmallows, and she just took a knife and she cut up bits of those little orange circus peanut candies and put them in there, and that's how they created Lucky Charms. Did you know that?
No, that's funny because the only two people I ever known to eat those friggin' horrible things was my ex-wife's sister. She would she had like bags in her house.
Oh, what, circus peanuts?
Yeah, circus.
Oh.
Wait, hold on. And then the other person, who do you think? We just talked about him. Our buddy Matt Herron.
Oh, Matt Herron, yeah.
He comes to the variety store with a Hostess fruit pie in his back pocket and these circus peanuts. And he's chewing on them and he's like, hey, John, you want one?
Matt, like, if you cut Matt, I mean, as bad as I am, you cut Matt Herron's veins and it bleeds Mountain Dew. It's bad.
Mountain Dew and, like, and sugar.
And
like
corn syrup.
Matt Herron is filled with the same thing Stretch Armstrong is filled with.
You could take them and bend them in malleable shapes. Anyway, okay. So yeah, that's what it was. There was a lot of stuff. It's all over. We did the colored eggs. So here's one real quick thing. When you would color the eggs, when I was a kid, we would eat those eggs for like the rest of the week to get rid of them.
Right, the pods, right? You're talking about...
No. You boil the eggs and then you color them. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, you color them with the pods. P-A-A-S.
Oh, yeah, pods. Yeah, that's the manufacturer. P-A-A-S. Yeah, right. With the vinegar. And you put them in the vinegar and the water and you mix them around.
And you make your freaking colors, right?
Right, but when I was a kid, after Easter was over, we would take those eggs and we would crack them and then we would eat them. My mother would make like egg salad sandwiches for school and stuff, but we would eat them. My wife looked at me like, wait, you eat those eggs? I go, yeah, why not? They're hard-boiled. There's nothing wrong with them.
Right.
She's like, oh, God, no, we would just decorate, and then we throw it out. I go, throw it out? Why would you throw out food? That's good food. There's nothing wrong with those eggs. I don't get it, man. I don't get it. She did a different way of growing up. I grew up, I guess, in the hood. I don't know. Anyway, you know what the big excitement was last week, John? I think it was on Thursday or Friday of last week, what the excitement was. You know what that was?
Wait, one second. Roy just sent me an email. Hold on.
Breaking news here. Roy Thomas.
Let me tell you what he said. This is actually pretty cool. He goes, hey, John, I thought I should let you know. I just got a copy of a new, nearly 300-page IDW hardcover titled We Spoke Out Comic Books and the Holocaust, with text by Neil Adams, Raphael Madoff, and Craig Yeo. The reason is that Gil Kane's and my Captain Marvel, number 19, December 1969, is reprinted therein. While in the course of the quotes that they have for me, I clearly acknowledge that the Holocaust-related story was basically Gil's idea. What I was surprised to see is the accompanying three-page essay's first sentence. This Captain Marvel story was the first superhero comic to involve the Holocaust. Wow. Isn't that interesting?
Wait, the Captain Marvel book that he wrote, we're talking about Marvel? It was a Holocaust story?
Yeah, Captain Marvel, 19 in December 1969 is the first book that Roy says this Captain Marvel story was the first superhero comic to involve the Holocaust. So all those years that it was like in the 40s and 50s, they never mentioned that. So this is actually great. Captain Marvel number 19 from 1969 was, and he said it was basically Gil Kane's idea to put it in there. Wow.
I had no idea that. I think I've read that one. Is that the one with Captain Marvel's new uniform on the cover?
When did he get the new uniform?
That was, I think, 19, because before that he was in the white and green one.
Right.
And then he transforms into the red and blue one.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow, that's pretty
cool.
Well,
so what, IDW is releasing that this summer?
Yeah, they just did it was a new hardcover that's out now, which he just got. It's We Spoke Out, Comic Books and the Holocaust.
Oh, I did not know. Well, see that? There you go. See? You learned something here.
Yeah, he just sent me that right now, so something we learned. And I'm going to check out that issue. Captain Marvel.
I have that book, but I don't remember that. I don't know. I'll have to go back and look. It's been a while.
But that new book that seemed IDW put out that book, so Comic Books and the Holocaust, might be an interesting read, you know?
Might be. Anyway, speaking of comic books, like I was getting onto, the big news last week that broke, that made me smile from ear to ear. It would happen on opening day, baseball's opening day, the rites of passage, the thing that tells you that spring is back, the hope eternal rises once more. And it was the fact that Marvel announced that Dan Slott would be writing the very first issue of the all-new Fantastic Four, which comes out in August, right around Terrificon. How about that, John?
Well, let me tell you something. I haven't read comics since 2003 and all that. And I remember you called me and you were telling me about that. But you actually said something that was pretty good. Usually it's a lot of cucka. But this time you said something. You said, come on, John. You got to give it some credit. At least the Fantastic Four is back at Marvel. And I thought about it for a second, and you're right. You're right. Maybe I was being a little cynical, a little too much, because I don't like comics today. But you're right. It is good to know that it's back out there as the Fantastic Four, and that's CB, right? CB was
CB Cebulski's making the changes already, putting stuff in.
And you can tell he's really getting, like, the essence of stuff back out there. Like, you know, they're going back to basics. And though it's another reboot, another this, another that, yes, it is good that it's not just Marvel 2-in-1.
It's a course correction. Right back.
Yeah, you're right. I will give you that. And it is good to know that they're back, because let's be honest. The Fantastic Four is the foundation of the Marvel.
Well, it was one of those things I told you. There was just something wrong in the world knowing that the book that Stan and Jack helped create modern Marvel comics with in 1961 wasn't around. There was something amiss. It would be like if DC Comics wasn't printing Batman books or Superman. You'd be like,
just let me say this. Wasn't it weird that, like, okay, Reed Richards and Invisible Girl were, like, somewhere else, and then
they've been gone for a couple of years, yeah.
Yeah, and he was, like, in the Guardians of the Galaxy. He was just kind of hanging out with
them. The Thing was in the Guardians, and the Human Torch had joined up with the West Coast Avengers or the Champions or something.
So they were just kind of using the characters, but not, like, giving them their proper due.
No, and then they came back with Marvel 2-in-1, which I started picking up as soon as it came out, because I was remembering my nostalgia factor, all those great Marvel 2-in-1 books from the 80s and the 70s with The Thing, you know?
Yeah.
Those are some. They were the equivalent to Marvel Team-Up. They were never as good as Marvel Team-Up because Spider-Man was greater, but Marvel 2-in-1 was really cool. Because
they were fun.
And then the fact that they did it with the Human Torch and the Thing harkened back to those original Strange Tales stories in the 60s when they used to have them.
That's cool.
So it's kind of like Marvel was trying to get back to its roots. And when they announced Dan Slott, who's been at Terrificon, who did Spider-Man for 10 years now, he's wrapping up his run on Spider-Man, and he's shifting over to the Iron Man books. And he did the Silver Surfer as well for a while. But he's a good choice for that because he's a funny writer and he gets the joke stuff that you need to have with the Thing and the Human Torch.
He's going to make it fun. Like, that's what you have to do because the Fantastic Four has been a little stale through the years. It got too serious.
That's the problem. They made it too serious, you know? It's supposed to be an adventure story.
Exactly. And that's... The characters are strong, but, like, I think that became the missing element.
And then the problem with the Fantastic Four is they had a very good supporting characters, but the ones they had in the last couple of years were just not working. I mean, you look at the old ones. You had Wyatt Wingfoot. You had the Inhumans. You had the Silver Surfer. These were all major characters that would pop in and out of the Fantastic Four universe. Then they turned it over to... what's it, Valeria, who's the daughter of Dr. Doom or whatever, and Franklin Richards, and it started getting into mutants, and I don't know. I really kind of gave up on it.
Yeah, when they go too far off, you always stay to the actual core that Stan and Jack, that they've done, and like, that always works.
You need that story. Remember they'd have, like, Crystal and Johnny Storm and... You got the
they have, like, the love triangles.
Alicia Masters, the blind girlfriend of the Thing, and then their woes, and that's the whole essence of the Fantastic Four. It's just a big soap opera. If you don't get that,
and you don't forget Submariner and Sue Richards.
We won't go there again. But anyway,
and then And then Dr. Doom and Reed Richards got also that triangle.
That rivalry. Yeah, so you need to have that constant character conflict back and forth. If you don't get that, and you just make the Fantastic Four go on wacky adventures where they have to save the universe, it doesn't work. It just falls flat, you know? You need that.
I think what Dan Slott is going to do very well is you have to have that. Okay, though they argue and they have that stuff going on, they love each other. So it's like you've got to have that family togetherness that they're one for, you know, all for one for all, and they go into the negative zone. You know, they're always supporting each other. And I think Dan Slott will do a good job with that.
Yeah, no, he will. He'll do a good job. Like I said, he's an old-time Marvel fanboy.
I just wanted to throw this out, too.
What's that?
I actually kind of like, I know you were talking about the Marvel 2-in-1 and the Marvel team-ups, like, but the Thing, I think that kind of got a, you know, obviously he's always second to the Hulk, but the Thing was a great character to have other characters bounce off of, and that's why I thought Marvel 2-in-1 was so good. And same with Spider-Man, you know, you put them in the Marvel universe around them, you know, with these other characters, and I always thought the Thing was such a great character because, let's be honest, when everything used to go wrong, like, you know, the Thing was always one of those heroes the Avengers would call, or, you know, Spidey would call, or somebody would, they would always call, but, hey, and the Thing was always that guy that kind of got into that adventure, like, whether he wanted to or not, but he was always that great backup guy, you know? It wasn't, back in during the 70s, think about that, he was always that one those heroes called, you know? They could always trust on Ben. They could always get him.
Yeah, no, and it's funny you mention that because I was stuck over the weekend here with the snow and all that stuff, and I started putting together more guests for Terrific Con, and one of the artist guests we have is an old school artist, Mr. Ron, I was going to call him Ron Silver, but that's not the name I'm thinking of right now. Ron Silver was an actor. Ron Wilson, who was the artist on many of those Marvel 2-in-1 books.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's an old school, let's see, let's look some of his credits here.
Wasn't he more kind of like, because he was kind of a knockoff of George Perez, right?
He was like a combination of George Perez. Actually, he worked with Perez on a lot of books.
Right, and Perez, they always have, like, once they can't get those creators anymore and they go off into different things, you know, they always put in a creator that's kind of like them. Because I remember Perez did a lot of those Marvel 2-in-1s. Those were great.
Yeah, no. Think about that. When they got rid of Jack Kirby, they got Rich Buckler in, who was mimicking him. When Todd McFarlane left, they brought in Eric Larson, who could mimic his style. So they do that a lot with books. They don't want to lose the readers, so they get an artist who's similar to in style, you know?
And here's something we can tell people that are going to come to Terrificon this year, that Ron Wilson also drew that issue where the Thing puts Moondragon on his legs and he starts spanking her. Do you remember that?
I remember that was a very odd story.
It was weird. He just wanted to, like, very odd. But that,
we'll have to ask him about that book.
Yeah, and somebody, I forget the number of the issue, but that'd be a funny thing to, like, who was writing those at that time, though?
I was just trying to figure that out. John Byrne wrote a bunch of them when they became the Thing.
Chris Claremont wrote a few, too. Chris
it might have been Steve Englehart.
Oh, yeah, Englehart. I'll have to throw...
Well, I'm looking right now at some of the other books he worked on besides Marvel 2-in-1. He did Luke Cage, Power Man. He did Black Goliath. He did the Hulk. He did the Hulk magazine.
Oh, and just let me throw this little advertisement out there, because our buddies, our subsidiary buddies, Jason Moulton from Vermont Comic Con in September 17th through the 19th, I'll be with Steve Englehart at Vermont Comic Con. This friend's a Terrific Con in September. So if you guys want to come and see Steve Englehart, which he was at Terrific Con last year.
He was there last year, yeah.
I'll be with him at Vermont Comic Con. It's September 17th through the 19th at Vermont Comic Con.
Well, I'm looking at some of the other books. He did Iron Man. He did Deadly Hands of Kung Fu. He did Captain America. The one I used on the cover was with the Hulk, when the Hulk is smashing Captain America's shield.
That's Ron Wilson. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he did the Avengers, and the Avengers book I use in the artwork is when they are fighting Thanos. The Avengers are fighting Thanos. You got Thor, Captain America, Scarlet Witch, and Vision on the cover, which ties in right to the Infinity War, which comes out in about 3 weeks. So look at that. This is
Mitch. What? I want to throw something. I was talking to Roy this morning, and he said something interesting that I didn't realize. Okay, we talk about Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, and those years, like Stan Lee's years as editor in chief, and then Royce Thomas's years as editor in chief. Those were the two most prolific times in Marvel of creating new characters. Right?
Yeah.
And then there was, and then after that, very sporadically, there was a new character here and there, and then there was basically nobody till for a long time. That's why a lot of new characters. I asked Roy about that, because I think we were talking about, I don't know if we were talking about it on the podcast or just one of our rambles, late night rambles we were talking, but I asked Roy about that, and he said that creators didn't want to make new characters. They didn't want to do it because they knew they didn't, weren't going to own the characters. So a big, Roy said he would have created so many more, but he said at that time period nobody wanted to really create any new characters because they didn't want to, like, they didn't want to waste their time, so they just rehashed characters. So that was a big reason why after Roy's time there wasn't really many characters other than a few all the way to the Jesus, it kept, you know, all the way to the 80s and 90s, it didn't, the new characters didn't come along. You had a few, but not many.
That's why there's so many in the 60s, and then we don't see any for a while?
Yeah, and then after Roy's tenure, you had the next greatest, like, influx of new characters, but then it kind of just dried up. And that it's because nobody wanted to create new characters anymore.
You know? Well, because imagine if they knew they were going to make movies and TV shows out from years ago or later. And
they weren't getting anything.
They don't get the money for that, no.
But it's just kind of interesting because I just remember us talking about it, and I wanted to ask Roy that, and he told me today.
Well, look at that, too. Did I mention how I got this Joe Giella coming to the show a couple weeks ago? He's 90 years old. Did I mention him?
Oh, well, yeah, the oldest living Batman.
The oldest living Batman artist. He worked on books in the 40s. He did Captain America for Marvel, and then he worked on the first appearance of the Black Canary over in Flash Comics, and then in the 50s, he worked on the return of Green Lantern in Showcase. What is that?
So when he was doing Captain America, that was timely, right?
Yeah. It was with, Alan Schoenberg or Schoenberg?
Yeah. He used to do the covers, right?
Yeah. And this guy would work on it. But no, this guy, I looked at his resume, Joe Giella, and it's amazing. He's just like the first appearances of the Green Lantern, the Hal Jordan one, Black Canary, Poison Ivy, Kid Flash, and the Justice League of America, the very first appearance of the Justice League where they're fighting that Starro thing on the cover. This guy, Starro. He worked on all these books. It's just amazing.
He was drawing that? He was the artist?
He was the inker on them all.
Okay, because that was Carmen Infantino.
Yeah, Carmen Infantino would do it, and he would work with Carmine a lot. And because the Flash and Batman, I'm looking at the covers right now, and Gil Kane. He's like the Joe Sinnott of DC, you know? He was on all those books. But he's only going to be there Saturday only at Terrificon, so if you want to see him.
Where's he coming out of, Mitch?
He's in New York. He's not too far away, but...
Okay.
It's just weird. All these years, I've read those books. I never really looked at the inker a lot. I would always look at the artist and the writer, but the inker is... The inker can make and break a book.
You weren't as invested in the DC stuff, though, right?
No, I know, but I'm just saying, you know damn well that a bad inker could really kill somebody's artwork, you know?
Not Joe Sinnott, though.
No, not Joe Sinnott, but there's some people that I pick up the book and I go, oh, boy, you know?
You know who was actually really good as an inker and not as a penciler was Al Milgrom. Not Grimm, not Milgrom.
As a penciler?
Yeah, he was better as an inker.
Right.
As a penciler, oh my god!
No, he worked a lot with Jim Starlin. In fact, that's one of the secrets. If you ever see a cover, and it says artwork by Gemini J-I-M-N-I, that means it was done by Jim Starlin and Al Milgrom. Did you know that?
Yeah, my foray with Al Milgrom when I was a kid was he drew so many of those Hulk covers, right, and it drove me nuts. And I was like, here's another horrible cover. And this is when I was kind of backtracking because those issues came before me. But when you're going into the comic book store and then you're buying those back issues, they were only like $1.50 each. But I remember there was just so many Al Milgrom ones, and I was just like...
Well, he would crank them out. I think they would just give him a stack, and he would just make them... one
right,
after
and
another.
He could. The thing about Al Milgrom is he was a great deadline guy. That was his thing. He could draw fast, and he could always make deadlines. But was he good? You look at Secret Wars 2, and you can ask me if you can read through that story. Oh my God!
Secret? Why he? He penciled all the Secret Wars 2?
Oh my God! Secret Wars 2 with the
Beyond. Did you know that was supposed to be based on Jim Shooter? Have you ever heard that?
Well, the Beyonder. Like egomaniac, like...
No, the artwork. Or either it was supposed to be him, or physically, I don't know, maybe John Romita Jr. There was somebody that they used for a model of that. I can't remember.
I think John Romita Jr., but obviously with the perm. And people may laugh at that perm that Beyonder have, but in the 80s, how big was that? How popular
Everybody
was
had that hairstyle. That was the look.
Oh, my God.
You know? That was the big deal back then. I just realized I did a typo in something right here. This is what happens when you make these artwork things at 2 in the morning. I spell the word Suicide Squad. I put an extra A. It says Suicide Squatta. Whatever the hell that would be. But anyway, what other stuff going on? So the Fantastic Four is back. Probably because of that whole thing going on with the movie.
We should talk about the Immortal Hulk is back, correct?
I picked that up too last week, the Hulk.
Yeah, and they have to, he's kind of like immortal now. They kind of made him a lot like Solomon Grundy. And the reason why, I read something back on it, is that there's a lot of history in the Hulk's lore that he died and he came back. Like, it was kind of like talked about that he came back. So they kind of just took all that continuity and they made it like that's how he is now. So the Hulk can't die. He was always kind of immortal, long-lived, but now he is legit immortal. Like he comes back.
I didn't see that. Where'd you see that? Oh, that's why they're calling him that?
Excuse me?
That's why they're calling him the Immortal Hulk?
Yeah. Now he can't die. If you read the issue, like, you know, because he's just made of rage, he's totally immortal now. Yeah. Wow. But it was always assumed that during the comic run. Like, that's basically where they got the premise of that, because he died, like I said, he died a few times.
He died, I remember when he died, remember the gamma radiation burned off of him, and he died, and they put him under...
That was a good Hulk No More.
Yeah. And then that was Bill Mantlo writing that, and then Sal Buscema, and then they blasted him with... Gamma rays. You brought him back.
Sal Buscema's art with Joe Rubenstein inks.
Yeah, that was a really good story. That one.
Yeah, that's when the stuff was. That was pre.
No, but I was a kid and I was like, oh my God, he actually died. I thought he was done. I thought there was no more hope.
Yeah, that's the one thing you'll have over me, Mitch. I didn't actually start reading because you're a little bit.
I'm
like,
older, yeah.
Yeah, you're older than me. So when you were reading comic books in the 70s and like that time period, I think like everything was on point. Like obviously Stan Lee's time, but like that 75 to like to 1980 was such a great story.
Well, see, when you read those stories called the Fantastic Four breaking up and Captain America stops being Captain America, you think that's permanent. You don't realize they've done this story a couple times already because... How many times have the Fantastic Four broken up?
Right, no. But see, I started reading in the mid-80s and then I had to backtrack. And when in the 80s, they were kind of losing its luster because they were chasing. So you actually got to read it at such a great time.
Yeah.
The 60s and 70s legit were the best time for comics ever. And not to forget the merchandise that was all coming out too.
Well, don't they tell you that the books then, the value's not, they used to be worthless, but now with all the movies, a lot of those books are coming back up.
Yeah, everything is crazy. Like, all those, like even those movies have generated so much interest. And it's funny, I don't see a lot of those DC comics moving like those Marvel.
What's that now?
The DC.
Oh, I don't see. Did any of the value go up on DC when they have all these new shows?
There's a few and all that. And obviously the Golden Age stuff. But those issues that used to be, like, they're all $20, $30, $40 comics now. They're all, like, becoming really expensive.
You got to ask Roy this. I was reading about Hawkman and Hawkgirl. Was Hawkgirl called Hawkwoman when she first came out and then they went back and changed it?
I don't know. Yeah, that's a Roy Thomas question. Maybe at East Coast Comic Con when we're there, we'll do a...
Yeah, go plug another show, why don't you?
Oh, well, but we'll be with Roy there, and we'll we'll do a live. We should do a live Power Cosmic.
We should. Royal like that. I think I got to go on the, I don't even remember what day I'm there. Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah.
Is Roy there on Sunday or just Friday and Saturday?
No, Friday and Saturday, yeah.
Oh, all right, yeah, I think I'm going to leave.
Because we were at Carbo Show last year with Roy, and I was like, what? You were just, you've had enough. Mitch had enough.
You know, it wasn't so much, it was my friend that was there who wanted to go home, and he was going on and on about how he had to go home. I was like, he's not coming with us this year.
And I said, Mitch, let's do the podcast now with Roy, because we can't do it on the phone. We can't have Roy on the phone and then me and you talking. We have to be all three there.
There's an energy that only happens when you're live.
And you're too busy at Terrificon, so it's hard for that to happen, too. But maybe this will get one. Because Roy, and let's just be honest, Roy has only done two different podcasts ever. And only one, and we're the other one that he
how does it? Me. How was that other one? Did you ever listen to it?
I never even heard it. I tried, and it never came out. It was some political. They were more of a high rung one. He told me they came, but I never saw it. I forget what the name of it was, but it never came in.
Oh, but, how dare somebody call while we're trying to do the podcast? Well, we're not getting this phone. Don't these people realize it?
I like to do podcasts, and I said, me and Mitch.
You know what? This is why we do the podcast at 7 in the morning most times. You know that? Because right now it's about 1:50 on a Monday, and we got everybody and their brother calling today.
Who's calling?
My kid's home from school. He was just walking around making himself a sandwich, slamming the refrigerator door. I'm like, really? So you might hear some noise in this week's episode besides you and I going on.
Yeah, but that's the natural essence.
Usually it's the dog. Usually it's the dog barking. Anyway, that was a rather sedate episode. Oh, you know what? Well, you know what? You know what? Okay, we're going to wrap this one up because we're going to do a very special show that's going to air next week because I get to announce a guest next week that you'll love. Because it ties into your fan favorite. And I have a surprise that you don't even know about that I found out when I was doing my research on one of my other guests. So that's going to be next week on the Power Cosmic Podcast. See, a little tease there, huh?
Oh, look, what a special guest, Mickey?
No, it's something I just never knew. And then suddenly I put it together and it was a revelation to me. And I don't think you even know about it. See?
Wow. And you're going to reveal it to me?
I'm going to reveal it to you. So let's just wrap this one up, and then maybe we'll record the other one real quick right now. Come on, wrap this up. What did we talk about? Fantastic Four is back. You learned a lot of stuff, people. I don't want to hear that you didn't get any value out of this thing. And you heard what I ate for Easter. So that's good enough, John.
Okay, and that's that.
That's that, baby.
Been a production of Big Fedora Marketing LLC, the folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.